we have an opportunity with this trip to tell our own story.
Governor Walker talks about the president's upcoming trip to Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, August 25th. Good evening, I'm Ann Hillman. Also tonight, an Anchorage law firm is representing the state for free to defend Medicaid expansion.
We feel very strongly about it, and we're willing to dedicate our efforts in that regard to whatever extent it takes.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. And by the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
President Obama's visit to Alaska is now less than a week away, and Governor Bill Walker today told reporters his agenda for the presidential visit.
It's an exciting time for Alaska. We don't have a lot of presidents that stop here unless they're low on fuel.
For the White House, climate change is the theme of the visit. The president plans to spotlight Alaska's erosion and melting glaciers as signs that climate change is real and to bolster support for his carbon-reducing energy policies. Walker hopes to draw the president's eye to a few other matters.
We have an opportunity with this trip to tell our own story.
The governor wants Obama to see Alaska's need for more oil development to refill the pipeline and fund the state government. Walker says Obama's decision to let Shell drill in the Chukchi Sea suggests the president does not intend to use evidence of Alaska's warming as reason to block future oil development.
Well, I don't think so, because the fact that if he had taken a different position on offshore, I would be more concerned about that. The fact he said yes to offshore, I'm not as concerned he's going to say that.
When Obama tours Alaskan towns struggling with climate change, Walker says he hopes the president sees how expensive it is for the state to mitigate the damage.
I'll be talking to him about we can't be limited from access to our resources for the financial standpoint and be expected to relocate villages at the same time. So that'll be the discussion I have.
Walker says the White House has assured him the president doesn't plan any surprise announcements during the trip, and he intends to ask about that again this week. Governor Walker is continuing the legal fight to prevent Alaska tribes from putting land into trust. That status would reshape tribal sovereignty by expanding Indian country in Alaska. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
Lawyers for the state filed an opening brief late Monday to appeal a ruling that overturns the so-called Alaska exemption. Philip K. Peter Sr. is the Akyukchuk IRA Council Chairman. He spoke with the governor earlier this month when he visited the Kuskokwim village.
It's disappointment. After he mentioned that he was going to work with the Akyukchuk Native community about land into trust, I'm really disappointed. But I hope the governor will continue to work with us and resolve this problem.
Akyukchuk was one of the plaintiffs that successfully sued the federal government to allow trust lands. Tribes would enjoy broad jurisdictional power in a status likened to reservations. It also limits the power of the state on those lands. Governor Walker has faced pressure from tribes to drop the lawsuit he inherited from the Parnell administration. He delayed action for 7 months, but recently flew around the state to meet face-to-face with tribal leaders in the five communities involved in the suit: Akyukchuk, Tuluksak, Chalkitsik, Barrow, and Haines. Walker said Tuesday that he still wants to come to an agreement with tribes.
You know, the fact that we are continuing the case we inherited does not in any way mean that we're not going to take a step down the road to reach some sort of resolution on that. It wasn't available today or this week as far as the resolution wasn't available.
The state argues that the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act specifically prohibits the creation of trust land in Alaska, and that the court incorrectly interpreted earlier laws in their 2013 ruling. After a court ruled in favor of the plaintiffs 2 years ago, the Department of the Interior announced new rules in 2014 to allow tribes to apply to put land into trust. The ongoing court action has halted that process. Alaska Native leaders say the change, after years of litigation, brings them one step closer to self-determination. The state currently has one reservation for the Metlakatla tribe. Walker says the trust case isn't the be-all, end-all of tribal policy issues. He says he's working to establish formal communication channels with tribes.
I think the relationship between the tribes and the state is not good, has not been good for a long time. I don't see this case as anything that's going to bring closure or bring that any closer. So I see it as one piece of sort of a longer journey. And between the states and the tribes. And so we'll continue to look for ways to improve our relationship with the tribes in a meaningful way.
Harriet Brulette is the tribal administrator for the Chilkoot Indian Association in Haines, one of the five plaintiffs. She was traveling and not available for comment Tuesday. Earlier this month, after meeting with Walker, Brulette explained the importance of putting land into trust for the Chilkoot tribe.
It weighs really heavy. It weighs very heavy on my heart. It's the land of my people, you know, and we're struggling to retain it. We're struggling to hold on to a very, very small part of, you know, what was ours, what was once ours, you know, what the places that we went to subsistence hunt and gather and fish.
While Attorney General Craig Richards stated in a press release that the state's position continues to develop with tribes, quote, a change of that magnitude requires thorough and deliberative dialogue that can't occur in just a couple months. Lawyers for the tribes are due to respond by September 23rd in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
An Anchorage law firm is helping the state fight the Legislative Council's lawsuit aimed at stopping Medicaid expansion. Ray Brown, an attorney with the law firm Dillon & Fidley, reached out to the governor's office late last week. Brown says he was upset when he learned the Legislative Council was paying at least $450,000 to a Washington, D.C.-based law firm to argue the case.
I was greatly offended by it, and I talked to my partners, and we agreed that given the current budgetary crisis in the state of Alaska, that the state could ill afford to hire a private law firm to go up against this national firm, and we agreed to do it pro bono. We've litigated against large outside law firms on numerous occasions.
Attorneys for the Legislative Council filed the lawsuit in Anchorage Superior Court yesterday. They're asking a judge to stop the state from starting to offer Medicaid benefits to up to 40,000 new Alaskans as planned on September 1st. The new group of beneficiaries are mostly childless adults living in poverty. Brown says his law firm feels very strongly that providing health insurance to Alaskans is the right thing to do.
If you're going to be a law firm working pro bono, it should be for a good cause, and I can't think of anyone better than providing medical benefits, Medicaid, to those that are in the most need in this state. So we feel very strongly about it, and we're willing to dedicate our efforts in that regard to whatever extent it takes.
Brown says his firm will have as many as five lawyers working with a team of state attorneys on the case. The Legislative Council's lawsuit contends the expansion population is an optional group that cannot be covered unless approved by the legislature. In court filings, the council argues the state could face irreparable fiscal injury if Medicaid expansion starts next week. The first court hearing in the case has been scheduled for the afternoon of August 27th. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the world beyond addiction.
I feel like we've reached like a whole
different level.
Different level of ourselves, yeah.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. Many Alaskans who die in boating accidents don't die of hypothermia. Without a life jacket, drowning kills long before hypothermia does. More at pledgetolive.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Alaska military veterans testified yesterday at listening sessions in Kenai and Fairbanks about problems accessing federally funded health care benefits. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, they shared concerns specific to the Veterans Choice Act, as well as more general issues about working with the Veterans Administration.
Alaska U.S. Senator and Veterans Affairs Committee member Dan Sullivan organized the in-state listening sessions in light of what he describes as Alaska-specific problems with the Veterans Choice Act passed last year.
The Choice Act, ironically, in many ways was based on the model of Alaska, meaning to allow veterans to access health care outside of the VA system, Native health centers, other centers, and to provide flexibility. The irony is that when it was implemented, it started to cut off funding for those very programs in Alaska.
Sullivan and a team of Veterans Administration officials heard from numerous interior vets, many of whom, like Marine and Army veteran William Fisher, lamented general problems with the VA healthcare system, like basic inability to even reach the agency. Fisher says he spent the last week trying to get through.
I was on the phone approximately 1 to 1.5 hours each time. I purposely chose to call in the morning once, lunchtime, and in the evening, different times. They are always swamped. When you get through, half the times you get hung up on. The other half of the time, the people you talk to can't give you a straight answer.
Fisher says the situation has left him with unpaid medical bills.
I have a bill now that's about a year old. I still get these nasty letters. Now they say within the next 7 days, if I don't respond, it's going to collection agency.
Other veterans like John Taylor of Salcha pointed to issues specifically related to the new Choice Act program.
The main difference is if you want to speak to a doctor, if you want to have a blood test, if you have to have a procedure like a colonoscopy, you have to have it approved by Choice first. If you don't get it approved or the approval doesn't go through, they will cancel you.
Alaska Native Veterans Association President Ben O'Cleveland addressed a basic communication gap between Alaska veterans and the VA.
We have a many, tremendous amount of veterans that are out in the villages. Not only do we have Native veterans out there, we have other veterans out there from all walks of life and all cultures. And we have we speak English, but we don't speak your English. Our English is a little different and has different meanings. So when we try to tap into the VA and everything else, it's frustrating not only on the veterans, but it's also frustrating on the VA.
Cleveland suggested funding training for some Alaska veterans who could help others navigate the system. Recently appointed VA Health Undersecretary David Shulkin assured veterans their concerns are being heard.
I'm not committed to the old way the VA is doing things. I am committed to fixing this to make sure that this works for you and for veterans around the country.
The Alaska listening sessions were held in anticipation of a formal Senate Veterans Affairs Committee field hearing on the Choice Act happening Tuesday in Eagle River. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Earlier this month, a Juneau man died at Lemon Creek Correctional Center 12 hours after being booked on non-criminal charges. That man was 49-year-old Joseph Murphy. Among other things, Murphy was a veteran of the Iraq War. His squad commander says it changed him forever. KTOO's Lisa Fu spoke to some of the men Murphy served with and has this story.
Mike Mercer joined the Alaska Army National Guard in the summer of 2001.
That's where I met Murphy.
Mercer and Specialist Joseph Murphy both lived in Juneau.
Murphy taught me how to march. Murphy taught me all the really basic stuff, how to shine my boots, how to stand at the position of attention, the position of parade rest.
One weekend each month, they saw each other for training. Then in 2005, Mercer and Murphy and many others in the Alaska National Guard were sent to war for 1 year.
When we went to Iraq, we all got different little nicknames and stuff like that, and Murphy got Eskimo Joe.
Murphy's wife of many years could not be reached for comment. According to a paid obituary in the Juneau Empire, Murphy was born in Anchorage but grew up in Emonic. Mercer and Murphy were both gunners, each conducting patrols from a gun turret of a Humvee.
Murph just worked harder than everybody else, it seemed like, just because he was always giving as much as he could give. He definitely took care of the guy to his left and to his right. If somebody needed more water, somebody needed somebody to talk to, somebody needed some help with anything, Murph was really supportive of people.
Ed Irizarry says Murphy put his life in jeopardy looking out for others. Murphy was part of the squad Irizarry led in Iraq. During patrols,
we encountered other vehicles that were blocking roads that were suspicious. It could be a car bomb.
Irizarry recalls times when
I was going to walk up to it and Murphy, no, I'll go to a charge, and he takes off running. And he comes back, and he says, all clear, you know. So what do you tell a man that has just went out there and could, you know, give his life for you? What do you tell that guy? I think he doesn't seem to be enough.
Irizarry says he was deeply sad when he heard Murphy died.
Joe was living with a lot of demons, as the rest of us are.
Irizarry mentions a specific car bombing in Iraq, but doesn't give details.
He had to witness something a human should never have to see. And I think that damaged him. You know, you take a 40-year-old man who has never seen anything like that in his life, and he's got such a big heart, family-oriented, do anything for anyone, happy-go-lucky, and then he sees that hell. That changes a man.
Irizarry lives in Ketchikan and retired from the military after 22 years, including time in four combat zones. He says Murphy experienced post-traumatic stress disorder and sought help. According to the National Center for PTSD, more than 40% of National Guard members who served in Iraq or Afghanistan have symptoms of PTSD. Murphy's obituary says he also battled depression and struggled with substance abuse. But Irizarry wants Murphy to be remembered as the funny, kind man he was.
You could crack a joke on him or tease him about something, and he would laugh so hard at himself and just never got upset. He just kind of shake his head. Okay, you got me. So he was just, you know, like a young kid, and you couldn't help but fall in love with him.
Mike Mercer also experienced symptoms of PTSD, although he's never been clinically diagnosed. Before Iraq, Mercer says he was a people person. When he returned to Juneau in 2006, he was apprehensive of large groups. He had bad dreams. He couldn't watch July 4th fireworks and had trouble driving close to other cars.
All of us have had problems here and there, you know. Some stuff fades, some stuff doesn't.
Mercer says the last time he saw Murphy was about 5 years ago at Fred Meyer.
It doesn't matter how long we go without seeing each other. Could have been another 10 years before I saw Murph. We'd still embrace each other as if we'd just seen each other yesterday, you know?
Mercer says when you serve in war together, you're brothers.
It's just a bond that just, you can't break that. Time ain't gonna break it. I guess even the death of one of your brothers can't break that either. Murph will always be my brother.
Murphy was in the emergency room of Bartlett Regional Hospital the night of August 13th. Juneau police transferred him to Lemon Creek Correctional Center on a 12-hour protective hold. A police spokesman says alcohol was a factor. Murphy died in a holding cell the next morning of an apparent heart attack. The obituary says Murphy will be buried in Emonic. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
These days, being into STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, doesn't make a girl a geek. It makes the world a better place. If you like numbers, nature, computers, and figuring out how the world really works, go to beanengineeralaska.com. You just might like what you learn. And it's not just for girls. This message on Alaska Public Media brought to you by ExxonMobil in Alaska.
Alaskans can expect warmer, drier days this coming winter. That's according to the National Weather Service, which, as KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, is drawing on new tools and techniques to peer into the future.
Rick Toman is the Alaska Region Climate Sciences and Service Manager at the National Weather Service. He says over the last 3 years, advances in modeling are giving meteorologists more confidence to say what the future looks like. And based on those techniques, he says Alaska will see a significantly warmer winter this year.
We've got a very strong El Nino in progress. We also have very warm sea surface temperatures continuing in the Gulf of Alaska. We've got less sea ice than the long-term normal. So all of those things add up to really give us a leg or a leg and a half up on those warmer than average temperatures.
And what may be good news for those who shoveled their own driveways, Toman doesn't see much snow in the late winter.
There is a tilt towards drier than average winters during these moderate and strong El Nino events.
Toman adds, it only takes one or two significant weather events to dump enough snow for mushers and skiers. With the warmer temperatures, expect more days of freezing rain. Toman says the conditions that turn roads into ice rinks have been increasing over the last 5 years, but he says that increase seems to be part of a cycle. In the 1920s and 60s, there were also significant periods of freezing rain.
So we've kind of had in the last 100 years three of these spikes in freezing rain events, followed by years' worth when there was hardly any.
With increasingly robust tools and techniques, Toman predicts within a few years, forecasters should be able to say how stormy any season is likely to be. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
Last spring, for our series, The Blind Spot, we spoke with two young women who were calling Madison and Kylie. Those aren't their real names, since one of them is a minor. They were both battling addictions to methamphetamines. To escape, they moved to Wasilla to get away from their friends and families who are still using.
Okay, if you try to quit and you're still around all those people that do drugs and all the druggies, then...
it makes it 1,000 times harder.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, Madison and Kylie have lost their housing in the valley and have moved back to Anchorage. They came into KSKA to talk about how they're doing now. Initially, they were staying with Kylie's dad, who was still using meth.
And we did see some of our old friends, but it wasn't as bad, I guess, as I thought it was going to be.
We just basically ignored them, though.
Yeah.
But even though they were, even though it's not good to be around them, because it was actually really hard for us being with her dad, because, you know, we knew what they were doing in the back room. And so we're just, like, out there in the living room, like,
alone all the time.
Yeah.
Didn't really see him, even for living with him.
How did you keep resisting?
By looking at all the people that were in the house.
And how, like, far we've seen them fall.
Like, how crappy they were compared to how awesome we were, basically.
Did you start job searching? Apartment searching?
We didn't want to start job searching at that point until we had a stable place to live, because we knew we weren't going to stay with her dad for very long, and we didn't really want to. And it's really hard to get a job, you know, when you don't have a stable place to live, because it's just not.
So how did you end up finding a stable place to stay?
We actually moved back in with my cousins, which we had stayed off and on with them when we were trying to get sober before we actually did stay sober.
How does it feel being around someone about your own age, your cousin, who's clean?
I really like being around my cousin all the time. It's like a good environment. He helps us a lot more than most people do. He's there for us more than most people are, so.
He really wants us to do good.
It's nice having that.
He's kind of like a parent.
So it's really nice having him around.
Mm-hmm. He has a car and he's always like, okay. And he like checks in with us, like, if he's at work and we're supposed to go to work, he'll call and be like, okay, I'm calling just to make sure that you're awake and getting ready for work and, like, whatnot.
So
he's very motherly.
So he's,
but I say motherly funny. Because he's so gay also.
Oh.
Not fatherly, he's motherly, but...
Is it nice to live with someone else who's gay, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes it a lot easier, because...
You can just relate on a different level. Even though he's a gay guy, he can still...
There's just, like, jokes we can make with him that you can't usually make with other people, and they'd be like, well, how do you not get offended at that? Because you're making fun of gay people. It's like, it's okay with us, because we know we're all joking, we're not being serious.
You have a stable place to live. You have positive influences in your life. Are you working?
I work in the Fifth Avenue Mall. I like the environment with everybody. I like being able to help people and feel like I'm actually helping somebody with their day, even if it's something as small as like selling shoes to them. So.
What about you?
Well, I recently just lost my job because I was late one time. But I'm trying to get a job just anywhere. I don't even care where I just want a job, you know? I want to get a job back at the teen center, which is where I'd worked before I went to Wasilla.
What about school?
We're kind of like in between schools right now. Yeah. I'm hoping to maybe go to SAVE because that's the school that I've wanted to go to.
So how are you two doing? Last time we talked, you guys talked about how you get annoyed with each other when you are on drugs, but you're better when you're off.
Yeah, we are. We still fight.
She's still annoying sometimes.
So are you. But we're actually planning our wedding in 2 months. But she doesn't do very much of the planning.
That's what my best friend is for. They're planning away, and I'm like, thank God.
She tried telling me she was going to wear jeans to the wedding, and I told her I would walk, like, turn around.
I said some black skinny jeans, like, that's classy, right?
Yeah. No.
So, why marriage? I'm sure you've heard it 1,000 times before. You guys are real young.
Yeah, a lot of people have given us their 2 cents on why we shouldn't get married.
We've been together for, like, a really long time.
Like a year.
Yeah.
Like a year and a half. But we've been through a lot more than most people would in, like, 20, 30 years of marriage, so we've put each other through a lot more, too, so we know we can get through it all. We've actually come really far than how we used to be in talking things out, and we've been doing a lot better since getting sober and coming back.
I feel like we've reached, like, a whole...
Different level of ourselves,
yeah.
I really like what we do. Yeah, I really like the way that we are now, like, drinking and all the things that most kids our age do isn't entertaining at all to us anymore. The most, like, entertaining thing we do is we've tried to go, like, geocaching, and we, like, go home and we'll eat a bunch of candy and watch horror movies.
We do stuff that, like, older people do that everyone thinks are boring.
I don't know. I think it's really fun.
That was Madison and Kylie, two young women who are supporting each other to overcome their meth addictions. We met them first last spring for our series, The Blind Spot. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ben Matheson in Bethel, Dan Bross and Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, and Lisa Fu in Juneau. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor. And I'm Ann Hillman. Have a fantastic evening.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. Alaska oil and gas have a huge impact on all of us, but how much do you really know about them? At akoilandgas.com, you can take an oil and gas IQ quiz and get the facts from reliable sources. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association.
Broken hips and head injuries can have life-altering effects, especially for older adults. But no matter how old you are, it's important to be physically active to prevent injuries. Activity can also increase your strength, balance, and can be done at any age. Ask your healthcare provider about activities that will improve your health. Learn more about starting a new activity at injuryprevention.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.